The headlines: President Ibrahim Raisi says Iran's recent attack on Israeli targets was a necessary response to the regime's strike on the Iranian embassy in Syria. The death toll from the U.S.-Israeli onslaught on the besieged Gaza Strip has surpassed 34,000. Most of those killed are women and children. And people in various countries take to the streets to show their support for the people of Palestine in the face of relentless Israeli atrocities. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour: Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi has hailed the country's recent attack on Israeli targets as a great hour that showed the strength of the Islamic Republic and the power of its armed forces. Raisi said the true promise operation was a necessary response to Israel's strike on the Iranian embassy in Syria earlier this month. He said the operation also enhanced unity in Iran. The president made the comments as he addressed people in the city of Damghan during a provincial trip. In Tehran, the commander of the Iranian Army's ground force, Brigadier General Qumar Seydari, said armed forces successfully punished Israel in their retaliatory strike. He was addressing worshippers during the weekly Friday prayers in Tehran. The commander stressed that the operation showed how empty and fake Israeli claims of military prowess is. Seydari said the True Promise operation shifted equations in West Asia in favor of Iran. Iranians have taken to the streets across the country in new rallies against the Israeli regime over its war on Gaza and acts of aggression against Iran. Protesters filled the streets in the capital, Tehran, and other major cities after Friday prayers. They denounced Israel's genocide in Gaza and its crimes against Palestinians there. The protesters also chanted slogans and carried placards in support of the Iranian armed forces' recent operation against Israel. The demonstrators chanted slogans against Israel and its main supporter, the U.S. They denounced Israel for its repeated acts of aggression against Iran, including an attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria on April the 1st. Our correspondent Gisumi Shahmadi has been present at the site of an anti-Israel rally in central Tehran. Let's listen to Gisu talking about what's going on during the rally outside the University of Tehran.
You see banners that people are holding, and these banners all read, IRGC, we thank you, and they also read Operation True Promise. They're chanting slogans calling down on Israel, and like I said, they're very angry at, they're expressing their anger at the Israeli regime. It's basically their support for the IRGC and this operation, and they're saying how proud they are that the IRGC carried out this operation, and of course in every aspect possible that you could consider, according to the people who are taking part in this demonstration, this was a very calculated response.
Iran's army says explosions heard in Isfahan earlier on Friday were due to the activation of air defenses in the central Iranian city. The Army Chief Commander Major General Abdurrahim Mousavi says air defenses in Isfahan fired at suspicious objects. He said no damage was caused. Earlier, informed sources said Iran's air defenses shot down three quadcopters over Isfahan. They said no foreign attack had taken place. No incident occurred at military and nuclear sites either. The International Atomic Energy Agency also confirmed that there has been no damage to Iranian nuclear sites. Meanwhile, Iran's civil aviation organization said all airports across the country have been brought back to normal functioning after flights were temporarily suspended. The latest development comes amid Israel's threats to strike Iran in response to its weekend attack on Israeli targets. Israeli forces have carried out more raids in the West Bank, killing several Palestinians. A number of Israeli forces were also injured in clashes with resistance fighters in the occupied territories. For more details, we're now joined by Mona Kandil, our correspondent in Ramallah. Mona, welcome to the program. What do you have to share with us?
Since the early hours of Friday, Israeli forces stormed Tulkarem and the refugee camp of Tulkarem East, Nusheb's refugee camp east the city of Tulkarem. And during this military operation, Israeli forces had been completely surrounding the refugee camp, surrounding a number of buildings there. causing severe destruction in the infrastructure. And there were reports coming from Nusham's refugee camp about exchange of fire between Palestinian fighters, members of the resistance group, and the Israeli forces. Well, during this military operation, and the Israeli troops were preventing Palestinian paramedics to enter the refugee camp. One Palestinian was confirmed that he was shot and killed. This Palestinian, Salim Al-Ghanem, he was shot and killed inside the refugee camp of Nur Shams. And his two brothers had been also killed by the Israeli forces on the 17th of October. So unfortunately, we are speaking about now three brothers had been killed. Two of them were killed on the 17th of October 2023, and their third brother was shot and killed by the Israeli forces today. We received reports from local sources from inside the refugee camp that unfortunately the Israeli forces succeeded to wound or kill a number of Palestinians. However, because the Israeli military and the Israeli forces are not allowing anyone or paramedics or ambulances to enter to the refugee camp, and specifically in that area, they are speaking about that at least four Palestinians were either shot and killed or shot and wounded. They don't know how their health condition is bad. But the Israeli media is claiming that during the military operation, the Israeli soldiers succeeded to eliminate a number of Palestinian militants, as they describe them, including one Palestinian, Muhammad Jaber Abu Shuja. He is the commander of Tul Karim Brigades, an armed wing of the Saraya al-Quds. They claim that the operation was meant to assassinate Abu Shuja and other Palestinian fighters. So the Israelis are saying that they eliminated a number of Palestinians there, including Abu Shuja, who's the commander of the Tul Karim Brigade. Palestinian paramedics and the Ministry of Health have not confirmed that four Palestinians were killed, but they confirmed that at least one Palestinian was killed, and he's Salim Al-Ghanem. The fate of the other Palestinians who had been shot and wounded by the Israelis is still unknown, because the Israeli forces are still surrounding the refugee camp, preventing anyone to enter to that specific area where exchange of fire is taking place between Palestinian fighters and the Israeli forces. The Saraya al-Quds had earlier issued a statement saying that their fighters succeeded to detonate explosive devices into Israeli vehicles and bulldozers and caused destruction in at least one armored vehicle.
Thanks a lot. Mona Kandil joining us from Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. Moving on, the Palestinian government and Hamas have condemned the United States for blocking Palestine's bid for full UN membership. The resistance movement Hamas denounced the U.S. for using its veto power to block the bid. Hamas said the U.S. move is in line with its continued support of Israel, which the movement said has made the regime more isolated internationally. The Palestinian Authority also denounced the U.S. veto as unfair, unethical, and unjustifiable. It emphasized that the U.S. veto defies the will of the international community. Palestine's U.N. envoy also said the U.N. membership was a necessary step to reverse injustice inflicted on Palestinians over the past decades.
The fact that this resolution did not pass will not break our will. And it will not defeat our determination. We will not stop in our effort. The state of Palestine is inevitable. It is real.
Mansour added that Palestinians would continue efforts to become a full UN member. The U.S. was the only UN Security Council member to oppose Palestinian full membership bid. 12 members voted in favor, while 2 abstained. There have also been international condemnations of the U.S. veto. Russia said the U.S. had demonstrated that it only considers the interests of Israel. Egypt said Washington is violating its legal and historical responsibilities. Also, the Organization for Islamic Cooperation said the move violates the provisions of the UN Charter, which allows membership for all countries that accept the obligations contained in it. on this segment of the program. Over 6 months on, the Israeli army continues its death and destruction campaign in Gaza, where more people are falling victim to the relentless attacks. At least 9 people were killed and several others injured in fresh attacks across Gaza. There are also reports of 15 people missing under the rubble. The attacks hit 2 different areas in Gaza City, as well as Nusayrat refugee camp in the center of the strip. The death toll from the Israeli genocide in Gaza has now risen to over 34,000 since early October. Most of the victims are women and children. Thousands more are still unaccounted for. The Israeli war has also caused a worsening humanitarian crisis in Gaza, where almost the entire population faces hunger. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have political commentator Said Zain Abbas joining us from the Pakistani capital, Islamabad. Also from London, we have columnist and political analyst, Mr. Saeed Shabi. Let's start off with Mr. Abbas in Islamabad. So almost every crime possible has been committed against the Palestinians in Gaza by the child-killing Israeli regime. I want you to give us your perspective on the manner that the Israelis have been carrying out this savagery and this genocidal onslaught against the entire population in Gaza.
We, the people of the subcontinent, had our ancestors had faced the worst ever colonization effort from the British. And the stories were unbelievable. Our generations doubt this to authenticity of these atrocities which were committed by the British colonizing authority. But now, when we are witnessing the Gaza massacres, we are doubtlessly sure that British would have done this to our nation. I mean, how can you kill and murder hundreds of thousands of people just to boost your economy? And now we are witnessing the same. It's unbelievable. And you know, worst part of the story is not that someone is killing 38,000 people, from which 14,000 were of children. But the worst part is that someone on the UN floor justifying this, and a lot of people who call them humanists or who call that the social civilized nation are sympathizing with these child killers. I mean, this is unbelievable for anyone sane and anyone who has heart in his chest. I mean, this is unbelievable. But now, I think, on the other hand, it has unleashed the hypocrisy of the Western world. We have witnessed it in the case of ISIS performing these acts in Syria. And then the Ukrainian war arrived, and we witnessed that the West become concerned about the murders, because those were the blue-eyed people from their own generation and from their own race. So it's all about racism and nothing else. So no one is concerned about the Palestinians. And more interestingly, the 35,000 Palestinians were less important than the 878 workers who were Westerners. We have witnessed that just by the killing, as the murders of aid workers, everyone start calling it to stop it. Why? Because just because they were Westerners? This is really a hypocrisy. I mean, no other word can explain the severity of the situation. Now, no one is interested in Western humanism or Western civil opinions. I mean, it's very clear now that West is only concerned with the interest of Israel, because they are the last symbol of colonization which they have committed from last 500 years. So I think the steadfastness of Gazan people and the whole resistance faction made it very clear for the world that West is not interested in any sort of human right. This is only a matter of racism and only a matter of benefits. And they are only concerned with the benefits of Israel, nothing else.
Mr. Shahabi, well over 6 months of relentless death and destruction being carried out by the Israelis. It's clear now to everybody that the Israeli war is not just on the resistance, but on all of the people in Gaza.
Israel has made it clear that it wanted Gaza free from people, that it is empty. And repeatedly, Israel called on the Palestinians to leave Gaza from what they called the north of Gaza to the south. And now there are hundreds of thousands of refugees to the south of the Strip. So, number one, Israel did not make it a secret that it wanted the Palestinian territory empty of its people. Number two, it is very also clear that the Israelis want to annex Gaza, and then if she gets what she wants there, then she will also turn to the West Bank in order to get the whole of Palestine under the Israeli hegemony. Number three, human beings do not matter. They have no value, no weight in the Israeli dictionary and justice system. So they will go and kill in scores. In one go, they will kill 50 people. In another go, they will kill 200 people. In one third time, they will kill 20, and so on. And then the Israelis have realized that the Western world, which is supporting them, has no interest in the Palestinians, where they are killed or they are starved or expelled from their territory. All this is immaterial. The Western, unfortunately, Western countries have double standards, and they are not really upholding the rule of law, and the United Nations is too weak to stop the Israelis committing those crimes. And what we have seen recently in Gaza and elsewhere demonstrates these facts, and that unless there is serious approach to the Palestinian problem by the international community and the Arab and Muslim communities, the Palestinians will continue to bleed and to pay a high price for their resistance and refusal to leave their own homeland.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks to my guest political commentator, Sayed Zain Abbas, joining us from Islamabad, and thanks to columnist and political analyst Saeed Shabi joining us from the British capital, London. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
New Mexico's rivers are now the most threatened waterways in the United States after federal safeguards for wetlands under the Clean Water Act were rolled back. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. A Supreme Court decision that stripped protections from America's wetlands will have reverberating impacts on rivers that supply drinking water all over the United States, according to a new report. The rivers of New Mexico are among the waterways that will be affected most by the May 2023 Supreme Court decision in Sackett versus the EPA, which rolled back decades of federal safeguards under the Clean Water Act for about half of the nation's wetlands and up to 4 million miles of streams that supply drinking water for up to 4 million people, according to a new report titled America's Most Endangered Rivers of 2024. The Supreme Court decision cut protections for streams that only run during the rainy season or for periods of the year after snowmelt, which is typical for the arid environment of southwestern United States. When you look at the most endangered rivers this year, most of them are a result of that, Tom Kiernan, President and Chief Executive Officer of environmental non-profit organization American Rivers, told ABC News about the Supreme Court decision. Tom Kiernan added, "Those stretches of small streams that lead into the rivers or wetlands that support these rivers are no longer protected." About 96% of New Mexico's streams are now vulnerable to pollution due to the lack of protections, with potential harmful downstream impacts in other states in the southwest of the United States along the Rio Grande River and rivers Gila, San Juan, and Pecos, according to the report. In Santa Fe, the drinking water depends on strong protections for small streams that feed into the Santa Fe River and the Rio Grande. Anna Hansen, Santa Fe County Commissioner for District 2, said in a statement to ABC News. The Sackett versus EPA decision has stripped away those protections and our residents are now at risk, Hansen said. In Connecticut and Massachusetts, the hydroelectric power dam on the Farmington River is increasingly causing algal blooms to grow in the water, according to Tom Kiernan, which are very much harming the health of that river and the ability for that river to be a source of drinking water. Climate change is also a concern as researchers are monitoring increased water temperatures in rivers throughout the United States. The combination of climate change stressing our rivers and a Supreme Court decision to stop the protections for half of our wetlands that creates a combination that profoundly threatens our rivers, Tom Kiernan said. Although the majority of the endangered rivers on this year's list are not broadly known, they're critically important for drinking water, for wildlife habitat, for commerce and recreation, according to Tom Kiernan. They're especially crucial in arid states in southwest of the United States, and New Mexico needs to pass legislation to strengthen state laws and provide permanent funding for conservation programs. "We have depended on this water for hundreds of years," Vicente Fernandez, community leader in New Mexico, said in a statement. He added, "This is our tradition, this is our culture. We don't want to be people that lose these traditions because we haven't taken the right steps to protect our rivers." According to Tom Kiernan, the president and chief executive officer of environmental non-profit organization American Rivers, the report is a call to action for Americans to protect their rivers. And here are America's most endangered rivers of 2024. According to a new report, the most endangered rivers are in New Mexico, threatened by loss of federal clean water protections. The second most endangered rivers are the Big Sunflower and Yazoo rivers in Mississippi. The Yazoo Pumps Project is threatening wetlands. Duck River in Tennessee. Excessive water use threatens water levels in Tennessee. The Santa Cruz River in Arizona and Mexico. Water scarcity and climate change is threatening water levels in the Santa Cruz River. Little PD River in North Carolina, South Carolina. Harmful development and highway construction are negatively impacting the river. The Farmington River in Connecticut, Massachusetts, is being impacted by a hydroelectric power dam, creating increasing algal blooms. The Trinity River in California, the water management system for this river is outdated and is impacting the river. The Kobuk River in Alaska, road construction and mining is impacting this river. The Tijuana River in California and New Mexico is being impacted by pollution, affecting water supplies. And finally, the Blackwater River in West Virginia is being impacted by highway development. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. New Mexico's rivers, which include the Rio Grande, the Gila, the San Juan, and Pecos, are America's most threatened waterways, according to a new report. This is largely due to a 2023 U.S. Supreme Court decision that left more than 90% of the state's surface waters without federal protections from industrial pollution. Virtually all the rivers in New Mexico are losing clean water protections, according to Matt Rice, the Southwest Regional Director of American Rivers, the conservation group that publishes the annual list. It has the most to lose, and the threat is particularly acute in New Mexico. New Mexico, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts are the only states without permitting power to regulate how much pollution is in their surface water, making them dependent on federal protections from mining activities, wastewater management, agricultural runoff, and industrial pollution. The Sackett versus Environmental Protection Agency, EPA's decision issued by the U.S. Supreme Court in May of 2023 could affect more than half of the nation's wetlands and up to 4.9 million miles of streams, according to the EPA. In a landmark ruling, the Supreme Court found that only relatively permanent streams and wetlands with a continuous surface connection are subject to Clean Water Act protections under the guidance of the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA. In arid New Mexico in southwestern United States, many of the state's waterways only run during the rainy season or during snowmelt periods. This ruling and lifting protections for half of the country's wetlands is a real immediate threat to everything from the quality of our water to the price of our water to whether our communities can thrive and ecosystems can exist, according to Heather Taylor Meisler, the Senior Vice President of Advocacy and Regional Conservation for the nonprofit organization American Rivers. Heather Taylor Meisler added, "A lot of places in the country that enjoy Clean Water Act protections have had the rug pulled from under them, and as a result, we're going to be dealing with a lot more pollution."
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is the way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
What I'm looking at the passage in the Salawat, which is there in Dua Iftitah, the section of Salawat on the Prophet and his family. I just selected one part of it which is the Salawat on Amir al-Mu'mineen. And by looking at that, you know, we come to realize the position of Ali in the words of Imam Mahdi ajallallahu ta'ala farjuhu sharif. Allahumma wa salli ala Aliyyin Amir al-Mu'mineen wa wasi Rasul Rabbil Alameen wa abdika wa waliyyik. What does wali here mean? And this is important, even the sequence is very important. That first comes abd and then the position of vila. Wali, basically, we would translate here as the friend of Allah. As the way we say, La ilaha illallah Muhammadun Rasulullah Aliyun Waliullah. But the word wali also has two different dimensions. In relation to Allah, it means friendship or love. In relation to the ummah, it means leadership. But here, Imam Asr is talking about waliyik, that Ali is, oh Allah, your wali, so your friend. And when we look at the concept of friendship here, a wali of Allah is somebody who loves Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. At that level, we have thousands of awliya. People go to visit many, many graves of the awliya. But the essence of wali here is that not only that the wali loves his Rabb and his Lord, rather the Lord also loves his wali. This has to be a two-sided or mutual relationship of love. From Abd to Rabb, and from Rab to Abd. That's where you attain the position of being the wali of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And my proof is the ayat of Quran from Surah Ali Imran, ayat 31, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says to the Prophet, قُلْ إِن كُنْتُمْ تُحِبُّونَ اللَّهَ فَاتَّبِعُونِي يُحْبِبْكُمُ اللَّهُ. O Muhammad, say to your followers, if you truly love Allah, then follow me. If you follow me, Allah will love you. So you have two love here. The human being loving Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and Allah loving the human being. What is the link between there? Ittaba'i Rasul. To follow Rasulullah. When we look at this issue, this is where it's very easy for each one of us and for millions of Muslims around the world to say, we love Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But has anyone come back with a certificate from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to say that he loves me? Nobody. There is only one example. Only one example in the life of the Prophet, where this mutual love of the Abd to Rab and Rab to Abd has been confirmed. Where we know that from? From Rasulullah. And you know the story, I don't want to spend time in the details. When the Prophet went for the battle of Khaybar, you know, he sent the army under a prominent Sahabi. One day he came back, nothing happened. Second day, another Sahabi was sent. Third day, a leader from the Ansar was sent. All those came back unaccomplished. Then the Prophet kind of got disappointed, and he announced. And these words are from Sahih Muslim and Sahih Bukhari. Narration is from Sahal bin Sa'd al-Ansari, an Ansari Sahabi of the Prophet. He says, on that day the Prophet stood up, and he says, tomorrow I will hand over the flag, the command of the army, to Rajulan, to a man. Now that's where the Shias go, and they think that's the end of the story. The more longer version, I'm just using Muslim and Bukhari here, which says Rajulan Karraran Ghayra Farrar. Okay? What we do not realize that the fazilat of Ali is not in those words. What is after that? He says, tomorrow I'll give the command to a man, يُحِبُّ اللَّهَ وَرَسُولُهُ, who loves Allah and His Messenger. Not only that, this is him loving Allah and the Rasul. وَيُحِبُّهُ اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ, and Allah and Rasul also loves him. يَفْتَحُ اللَّهُ عَلَى يَدَيْهِ, Allah will grant victory on his hand. فَبَعْتَ النَّاسِ يَدُوكُونَ لَيْلَتُهُمْ, the entire night the whole Muslim army was wishing, oh, I be that person. According to Mufti Sheikh bin Baaz, a Wahhabi Mufti who died a few years ago in Saudi Arabia, somebody asked about this hadith from Sahih Bukhari in Muslim. He writes the comment there, agrees that this is absolutely right. And he says, you know, this is very important. Because all the Sahaba loved Allah and Rasul. So he is giving a certificate to them about that. But he says, but to say that Allah and Rasul loves him, specifically an individual, this is nowhere except in this case. So he says this is a very unique fazilat. And then he agrees who was given that. And then next morning, so everybody was there, hopefully, maybe they were praying 100 rakat that night. We don't know. Or at least do the nazar. If I get this, I'll do that. Next day, Rasulullah looked around, and then he says, Aina Ali bin Abi Talib? Where is Ali? He was told, well, he has not been feeling well, he has an ailment in his eyes, cannot see properly. So then Rasul should have then selected somebody else. But he doesn't do that. He says, bring him. He asked him, what is the problem? He says, well, I have this, you know, pain in my eyes. Rasulullah takes his saliva, puts it on the eyes, and that was an immediate healing and shafa. Gave him the command and the flag, and he says, Ali, go. Go to the battlefield, call them towards Islam. If they accept, that's fine. If they don't accept, ask them to come under the rule of the Islamic government. And if they do not even accept that, then you can initiate the battle. And this is where, you know, Amir al-Mu'minin went, and you know the rest of the story. And so in the Islamic history, if there is any incident where there is a certification from the divine sources that a person loves Allah and Allah also loves that person in return, is only in the case of Ali bin Abi Talib alayhi salatu wasalam.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahi Kareem Adi Alim Halim Hakim Mateen Ghafur Shakur Wadud قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you.
Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Evan Corcoran, a key attorney for Donald Trump, turned witness in the classified documents case against him, has left Trump's legal team. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. CNN Cable News Network has covered this story and tells us more. Evan Corcoran, an attorney for Donald Trump who became a critical witness in the classified document case against the former president, no longer represents him, according to a CNN report. According to multiple sources familiar with the matter, Evan Corcoran left Donald Trump's legal team in recent months. A notable departure as the criminal case remains in limbo in South Florida. Corcoran's quiet exit from Trump's orbit could pose a significant issue for the former president, with the potential for prosecutors to call him as a key witness if the case goes to trial. He was also one of the last attorneys on Donald Trump's defense team to have handled his federal investigations from the beginning, as his legal peril skyrocketed. Corcoran was brought on to help Trump fend off charges in the classified documents investigation, but instead turned into a central witness after Donald Trump allegedly misled him about the whereabouts of the documents at his Mar-a-Lago club and encouraged him to lie to the Justice Department and withhold those documents. 1 year ago, Evan Corcoran was required to appear before a grand jury investigating the case after a district judge ruled he could not use attorney-client privilege to shield notes and memos from investigators about his interactions with Donald Trump, saying that prosecutors met the threshold for the crime-fraud exception for him. The voice memos turned into notes provided a roadmap for prosecutors when they indicted Donald Trump. Corcoran is referred to as Trump Attorney 1 in that indictment. If the case goes to trial, Evan Corcoran will likely be a key witness for the prosecution. The case has been mired in delay and unresolved logistical questions for months now. Corcoran ultimately recused himself from representing Donald Trump in the classified documents case, but continued to represent him in other investigations. He personally accompanied the former president when he was arraigned in Washington last August on federal charges relating to his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Trump campaign spokesman Stephen Chung told CNN in a statement, "Mr. Corcoran remains on the legal team and is continuing to help fighting the Biden trial witch hunts," adding that any assertion otherwise is fake news, peddled by uninformed sources and untruthful reporting that seeks to leak disinformation and misinformation. Evan Corcoran's departure from the team underscores how those who could ultimately take either of those cases to trial are relatively new to Trump's legal team. Two other attorneys who were working on those two probes, Jim Trustee and John Rowley, departed last summer. The result is a loss of institutional knowledge from attorneys who were in the throes of the investigations, dealing with subpoenas and communicating with Justice Department lawyers before they turned into historic indictments. but it is Eben Corcoran's role in the classified documents probe that could pose the biggest problem for Donald Trump. According to Special Counsel Jack Smith, Corcoran's memos detailed his interactions with Donald Trump and reveal how Corcoran's client was scheming to undermine the subpoena from prosecutors. At one point, after Corcoran had personally searched for remaining documents at Mar-a-Lago, Donald Trump discussed with the attorney what to do with 38 documents marked as classified that Corcoran had found and placed in a Redwell folder. "Did you find anything? Is it bad? Is it good?" Trump allegedly said, according to the indictment. The two discussed whether the attorney should bring the documents to his hotel room to keep them safe. Donald Trump then reportedly made a plucking motion during the conversation, which the Corcoran memorialized as meaning, "Okay, why don't you take them with you to your hotel room, and if there's anything really bad in there, you know, pluck it out." Brian Butler, a former Mar-a-Lago walker referenced as Trump employee number 5 in the classified documents indictment of Trump, also placed Corcoran at a key moment leading up to the former president's indictment. During an interview with CNN, Brian Butler recalled helping unknowingly to move boxes containing classified information to the airport at the same time Donald Trump was greeting federal investigators at his property in June of 2022. "I remember seeing this tall guy," Butler said, "who now I know to be Eben Corcoran, and I saw a bunch of other people in the living room. I had no clue. I'm just seeing all these people. I have no clue what they're there for." Brian Butler later realized it was a meeting that Corcoran and another attorney had with investigators from the FBI. 2 months later, the FBI descended upon Mar-a-Lago with a search warrant. The British newspaper The Independent has also covered the same story. A longtime attorney for Donald Trump, who is expected to be a key witness in a criminal case targeting the former president's possession of classified documents at Mar-a-Lago, has reportedly left his legal team. Eben Corcoran, who recused himself from the Florida case last year, is no longer representing Donald Trump in any of his criminal and civil cases, according to a CNN report. Mr. Corcoran quickly found himself at the center of the classified documents case after he was hired to represent Donald Trump, who faces a 40-count indictment alleging violations of the Espionage Act, obstruction, and the illegal removal of federal records after he left the White House. His prolific notes and voice recordings that reportedly detail his exchanges with Donald Trump have become central to Special Counsel Jack Smith's prosecution, revealing how the former president allegedly misled his then attorney about his mishandling of sensitive documents and attempts to evade a subpoena. Eben Corcoran ultimately stepped down from the case 1 year ago following his testimony to a federal grand jury, while his client tried and failed to block his communications by invoking attorney-client privilege. A ruling from a federal appeals court panel last year effectively forced Eben Corcoran to turn over the documents, including recordings of Donald Trump, to the grand jury. Despite his recusal from the case, Eben Corcoran later joined Donald Trump at a federal courthouse in Washington, D.C., when the former president was arraigned on charges connected to his scheme to overturn election results in 2020. The Independent has requested comment from Mr. Corcoran and a spokesman for the Donald Trump campaign. A statement from the Trump campaign spokesperson Stephen Chung claims that Mr. Corcoran remains on Donald Trump's legal team. But the alleged departure of a key lawyer listed as Trump Attorney 1 in the Mar-a-Lago indictment could potentially pose a liability for the presumed Republican nominee for president as he battles 4 separate criminal cases in 4 jurisdictions, with his so-called hush money trial for allegedly falsifying business records due to begin on 15th of April. Evan Corcoran's detailed memos have provided prosecutors with evidence of an alleged scheme to undermine subpoenas from the U.S. Department of Justice and Donald Trump's own apparent request to get rid of potentially damning evidence in his possession. At one point, after Mr. Corcoran performed a search of Mar-a-Lago, Donald Trump appeared to ask him if he found anything incriminating among a cache of 38 documents and suggested he pluck them out, according to prosecutors. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kHz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel. Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on June 23, 2015 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. We have announced that by a certain deadline, we should have 20,000 megawatts of nuclear power. This is the country's need. We mentioned certain things as the main guidelines. These are the most important ones. Of course, there are other things as well. One is that they insist on long-term limits and restrictions. We said that we do not agree with 10-12-year limits. 10 years is a lifetime. All that we have achieved took place during 10 years. Of course, the nuclear history of the country is longer than this, and sometimes this is pointed out by some people. However, in the first years, nothing was really done. The main and fundamental task was carried out during the past 10-15 years. Therefore, we do not agree with the 10-year limit. We have announced to the negotiating team for how long we agree with the limits. But we have also said to them that we do not agree with the 10-12-year limit and other time spans that they speak about. Even during this restriction period that we would accept, research, development, and production should continue. This is one of the red lines on which the honorable officials have placed great emphasis. They said that they are not willing to stop our research and development work. They are right. Even during these restriction years, research and development should continue, but they say a different thing. They say that we should not do anything for 10-12 years and that we can engage in production and development after that. This is bullying and an exceedingly wrong statement.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Another important point is this. I would like to stress that economic, financial, and banking sanctions, whether those imposed by the United Nations Security Council, those imposed by the U.S. Congress, or those imposed by the U.S. administration, should immediately be lifted at the time of signing the agreement, and any remaining sanctions at reasonable intervals. Of course, the Americans have presented a very complex, multi-layered, and bizarre formula. It is not at all clear where this formula ends up and what its results will be. As I said, I speak in a straightforward manner. I do not know diplomatic expressions very well.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.